Right here. Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9 coming to you from NDC Oslo in the beautiful country of Norway. It's really nice here. Do you like it?
It's beautiful here. Yeah, is it's raining. Raining today, but
yeah, that's true. It was really lovely. We had a speaker dinner. I didn't speak, but they let me go. The boat was lovely. Did you go to that?
I did. Yeah.
So, is this your first NDC Oslo?
Second NDC Oslo. Yeah.
So, tell us who you're watching, buddy.
I'm Damian Brady. I just joined Donovan Brown's team as a cloud dev advocate.
But he has like the League of Extraordinary DevOps Gentlemen. Yeah, is that what it's called?
That's a thing he's trying to get started.
Are you one of them?
I am. Yeah. I haven't got my cape yet.
Oh,
I
should have gone with Donovan Brown. That dude is amazing. Seriously. So what are you going to be working on?
That's a really good question. I've only just started and nothing's really changed yet. I just had a couple of conferences, Prairie DevCon in Winnipeg, and then NDC Oslo. So I really kind of need to get settled when I get back. But the general thing is just to try and get people to succeed via good DevOps practices. So
let's talk about DevOps practice in general, because that's something that it's not recent, but it is recent. It's like something we should have always been doing. And when we hear about it, we're like, oh, yeah, I know. Tell us a little about what is DevOps and why is it important today?
You're right. DevOps is kind of this buzzword which encompasses stuff that we should have been doing all along. It's a little bit like Agile, right?
So sure.
Agile became this buzzword and everybody was saying we need to change everything that's happening. The people who are working really effectively were doing Agile already.
Right.
So same kind of thing. The people doing DevOps people working effectively have been doing DevOps. So it's basically, so I'll use the Microsoft definition, which is Donovan's one, which is the, I always forget the first couple of words, but it's a confluence basically of people, process, and tools to enable continuous delivery of value to end users.
Right.
So people working together, so the dev teams, the ops team, but not just dev and ops, there's security, there's marketing, there's, you know, testers, there's all of that sort of stuff, actually working together, using the right tooling and the right processes in order to actually get real value out to customers. So end-to-end ownership of what you do, all of that kind of good stuff that encompasses getting real stuff in the hands of users.
And I love the continuous delivery of value to customers, because in the end, it's not like nobody cares if we're using Agile or Scrum or how our Scrum meetings go.
Yeah.
Nobody cares how we store our backlog. In the end, they are giving us the money because there's some value that we're creating.
Yep.
And I think that changes the conversation around what is value. So how is value defined, do you think, in these kind of environments?
Well, I mean, it's completely customer dependent, right? I think one of the things that the good DevOps practices can encourage is the ability to actually monitor what's happening in production, so actually complete that feedback loop. So if you're still taking tickets from the left-hand side of your Scrum board to the right-hand side, that's not necessarily delivering value. If you mark that requirement as, yes, it's finished, but nobody uses it because it doesn't really solve the problem, then that's not value. That's checking a thing off the checkbox, but it's not delivering what the customer needs it to deliver. So that whole feedback loop is really, really important. And that's really how you define value. I mean, are you solving the actual business problem? So it's all very customer focused. It should be customer focused.
And what's funny is, like, our producer here, the wonderful Golnaz Alabegi, she's putting her headphones on now. She's like, the first time we all understood DevOps, I built this garbage tool that we use in our studio that sets up stuff so that we can do our stuff. When we're making videos, we have folders on a NAS that we put everything. Mm-hmm. And I built this app. And they're like, well, it needs to do this now. And then I'm like, okay. So I changed the code. I checked it in. And because I have VSTS running, right, it took it. And I was using Squirrel as a deployment. Like 5 minutes later, they open the app and they say there's a new version. Mm-hmm. They clicked on it and it was there. And they're like, holy cow, that's amazing. I'm like, that's DevOps.
Yeah. And the fact that, so you were concentrating on writing that feature, right? Making that change.
Yeah.
And the rest of it kind of just happened?
It just happened like 2 minutes later.
So that's how this stuff can be really powerful.
Yeah.
Because if you set up that amazing pipeline where everything just goes out and ends up in production, essentially, then you can focus on what you're good at, which is writing that feature, right?
And what was cool is that, like, look, setting up that pipeline was not easy. I had to learn, for example, how to add tasks into VSTS for my build process. I had to learn Squirrel, which is a deployment process, so that whenever there's a new thing, you know, it said there's a new thing, and how does that all happen? And it took a while, but the fact that I took that while up front
Yeah.
And then I changed a couple lines of code, and then I hit, I tested it, obviously, and then I hit a commit, and then everything just happened. Mm-hmm. That was amazing.
Yeah, and it allows you to do exactly what that definition of DevOps says, which is continuous delivery of value. Right. So if there's another feature that you need now, then you can just write that feature and you'll continuously deliver that value to the people using it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So before you were at Octopus Deploy, is that right?
I was, yeah.
Why don't you tell us about what that product is and then what it has to do with DevOps?
Sure. So Octopus Deploy is a deployment automation tool, mainly for .NET developers, but of late they've been expanding into Java most recently. So the Java stuff into deploying to Linux, into obviously Azure, AWS, all of the different cloud providers.
Sure.
Essentially, it occupies a specific part of this DevOps kind of lifecycle. It's the deployment automation. So it plugs in kind of after whatever you use for your build server. So you write your code, commit it to source control, have a build server that compiles the artifacts. So this is our product. And Octopus will orchestrate deploying that product to all of your different environments in a safe, consistent way.
So how does it do that? I've always been curious about, because there's tons of different tools out there, because like Donovan's right, it is about people first, mm-hmm. it's about the process, but then you have these products that glue all these things together, and I never quite understood where Octopus Deploy fits in.
So imagine you have a production server, which is like 10 web servers in a farm or something like that. You need to deploy the same binaries to all of those web servers. You need to maybe start IIS again on each of them. You need to update a database server, which is over here.
Sure.
All of that sort of stuff you can do manually, but you're probably going to make mistakes.
Right.
I mean, you need to like IDP onto all the servers, copy onto all the servers, things like that. Octopus will do all of that automatically. So you set up that process once, say, here are all my web servers. So set up the environment to say production has these web servers. And it will orchestrate pushing the files that are needed out to all of those, restarting IIS on all of them, doing all of the different tasks you need to deploy a version of that code.
Correct.
But as well as doing that in production, you have a life cycle before that. So you say, I need to be able to do this in dev now. So this same process, same binaries deployed to dev. If that all works, you can push that out to your staging environment, and that all works. So by the time you've done it to production, you know that not only have you tested the same code, mm-hmm. but you've tested deploying it in exactly the same way.
So what's the difference? So this is going to be a completely naive question,
yeah.
and you're going to help me understand it. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between what you would do with Octopus Deploy and writing like a really long PowerShell script?
I guess it's really just ease of use. And
yeah.
some people actually use Octopus like that. Octopus is simply a PowerShell runner. The steps under the covers, a lot of them run PowerShell if you're running against Windows. I guess the advantage of Octopus is a little bit like the advantage of VSTS, like the build tooling that you were using, where you have distinct steps that run. You can say there's tasks built in, so you can say I'm deploying an IIS website, and that's a step. You don't really need to know how to write the PowerShell for that. You just say I am doing this task, I'm running this step. The other big advantage is Octopus runs an agent on the target machine, which means that you transfer files remotely, securely over a pipeline, and then the task that needs to get run, the scripts that need to get run on that target machine as a local account.
I see.
So now your security is a little bit easier. You don't have to worry about domain accounts that now have the ability to hit production as well as your test servers and things like that. Yeah.
I guess that's kind of a naive question. I can make a batch file do whatever I want.
You can.
But it's not necessarily good to just do that because you don't have sort of all these safety nets in place. I'm assuming that Octopus Deploy also has a really good log of what was run and how things were run and when they're run and why they're run.
Yeah, and it actually pulls, so the example before of like 10 web servers scattered across your infrastructure, it pulls all of those logs back into the Octopus server. So you can see what happened on every one of those target machines just in this one place.
Got it.
So if you were doing it yourself, you had your own scripts and things and you fired them off from all over the place, the logs are probably going to end up local. You have to RDP onto the machine if something goes wrong.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it really just brings in, I mean, like a lot of software, it's stuff that you could do yourself. You could write it yourself, but that tooling allows you to do it in a much kind of nicer way.
Well, in a richer way, and I think repeatable, right? And that's the problem, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's get into it, because we're about halfway done with our time. I wanted to talk a little bit about someone knows they need to do DevOps.
Yep.
As Donovan says, we need to rub some DevOps on it.
Uh-huh.
What would be your suggestion? Let's just say they have an application that some dude builds and then he moves to like a FTP site and then everything happens.
Yep.
Let's just say they're doing it wrong. What are some suggestions you have for those out there that are watching? Mm-hmm. How does someone get started with doing DevOps correctly?
It's a good question. I'd say the number one easiest, most beneficial thing you can do is set up a build server. So continuous integration. So if you have a team of people all working on a code base, the hard part of that is merging everybody's code and making sure that the stuff I wrote doesn't break what sure. somebody else wrote. So I would start with CI, with continuous integration. So set up a build server, and if you're using like Visual Studio Team Services, or even if you're not, like the build tooling in that is really, really good,
right.
and it's free. So you can just start using that.
Yeah.
If you don't want to use VSTS, like TeamCity is another one of my favorites. And
Jenkins,
right. Bamboo, like there's a ton of these things. For small use cases, they're all pretty much free. Like you can just start using them. The huge advantage of that, though, is that you can concentrate on just writing your code, commit your code and push it to the server, and then it gets merged with everybody else's, and it runs a build straight away. Like continuous integration will run a build straight away. So right from not doing anything apart from committing your code, you know whether the build is broken.
Right.
You know whether you've got potentially a deployable piece of software now, and you don't have to worry about that, you know, did I just introduce a bug or did I just introduce an error? You'll know immediately. I think that's kind of a really good first step to getting down this process. And then once you've got the build, you can start looking at deploying that to a test environment.
I see.
And then once you've done that, deploying it to staging environments and slowly, piece by piece, build up a pipeline such that, yeah, exactly what you were talking about. You write your code and then it ends up in production if everything's fine.
So let's start with moving into a build process, and let's mm-hmm. get into this in a more detailed way, because
sure.
I mean, I think everyone knows when, like, if you're using Visual Studio, you hit F5 and there's some artifacts that come out, right?
Yep.
What does it look like when you're setting up a build process that's external to you, right? Because you want something that's repeatable. What does that look like in, for example, a .NET environment or a Java environment?
Sure.
What does that look like? Is it on my machine? Is it on a different machine? Are we using stuff like VSTS or Jenkins? And, mm-hmm. and if you are, how do I get started with that kind of thing?
So I think if you're using VSTS, that's probably the easiest one to describe. If you're using VSTS, your source code is in VSTS in a Git repository or a Team Foundation version.
Does
control.
It have to be inside of VSTS?
No, it doesn't actually. So the team build stuff with VSTS can pull from GitHub or like,
okay.
there's a couple of others as well, but
sure.
I've only really ever used it with GitHub or VSTS. Or local Git repos, I think it can pull from, or
yeah.
TFS at least can pull
like
from other Git
you
repos.
You could make, because the way I did ours is
yeah.
the master branch was, anytime I pushed the master branch, it was in VSTS and it
uh-huh.
would get it and it would trigger a build.
Yeah, but if you're using GitHub, for example,
yeah.
it can pull from there as well.
Okay.
So the general rule is, the general way it works is the build engine, so team build in VSTS or whatever build tool you're using, will be watching that source code repository, and when it sees a commit hit the server from on the branch it cares about, so master in your case, then it will say, right, I need to do a compilation. And it'll run through whatever you've set up for your build pipeline. So that's kind of the next thing. In team build, in VSTS, you can go to the build tab, click new build definition,
sure.
and then just say, this is a .NET project. Like, there's templates set out that will do all of the things you need it to do. Usually it's something like do a new get restore, then just do a compile, end up with binaries. Run tests on any binaries that have something .test.
I see.
Yeah.
And that was the thing I was asking about, because like usually when you build these artifacts, you just have like a .exe or some assemblies, right?
Yeah.
But that's not enough. You can also run tests on them.
Yeah, yeah. You can more or less do anything that you can script, but the templates set out a nice way of doing it. And I think the general templates will do a compile, they'll run tests, then they'll copy the artifacts that you've built into a particular location, like a drop folder, mm-hmm. and then once that's done, you're good. You have this drop folder which is saved against that build. You can keep them for as long as you want, or you can get them cleaned up immediately
right.
if you want. And so that's your artifact, that's your built application. So when you're actually doing deployments later on, when you're pushing that stuff out, you should be using those compiled binaries, because they've been built, they've been tested, and everybody's code merged. You know, this is a piece of your software that you know is working, or mm-hmm. at least is passing all your tests. So at that point, the build process is kind of done. Now, you might want to do other stuff during that build. You might want to do, you might want to do some static code analysis, for example.
Sure.
So having a look to make sure you don't have any security holes in your application.
I see.
The whole idea of DevOps also pushes this idea of like shift left. You want to find out that you've introduced a problem as early as possible in that pipeline.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So if you think about, develop all the way through to production, you want to shift the problem as far left on that pipeline as possible.
Once you've got your build and you've got your artifacts and your testing and you're trying to shift finding problems earlier in the pipeline.
Yep.
What happens after that? Is that something that also happens in the build process to move to these other environments?
It's pretty common for people to use the build to deploy as well.
Okay.
And I don't like that idea for a couple of reasons.
Okay.
The first is that it's really common to rebuild for your other environments. So you are building, deploying to a test environment, running some tests, and then you rebuild with some different configuration and deploy to your staging environment. And then you rebuild and deploy to production. The problem with that is each time you build, you end up with a new set of binaries.
Right.
And they're probably going to be the same, but you can't be absolutely sure. And the last time you want to ever, like, the last thing you want to do is test binaries for the first time when you put them in production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you do that? Like, I know, like, my app is completely insignificant. If it throws an exception, nobody cares, right? But in this case, like, I'm literally from the master branch going out to production, which is not good, right?
Well, it depends on your use case as well. Like, remember, this is continuous delivery of value to users. So if introducing a bug into production is something that you can fix really, really quickly, and it's only used by a handful of people, like, it's maybe not the most important.
Like, for me, it's like three people, maybe four.
And, I mean, the other thing is, if they started hating you a bit more because you kept introducing these bugs, then maybe it's a good idea to start introducing a better pipeline. But, I mean, in real kind of enterprise software, you want to make sure that you're not pushing stuff to...
So how do you go from... Because for my build process, the end of my build process would be putting it into, like, a testing environment.
Yep.
And then how do you go into... Like, what tools do you use now for that part? Because it feels like you're not in VSTS anymore, or are you?
Well, you can be. So release management is kind of the next part of that from the VSTS story.
And so that's something in VSTS?
It is in VSTS, yeah.
Let's talk about that, because I've never heard of this.
Oh, okay. So it's basically pretty much does exactly what Octopus Deploy does. It's built into VSTS. Mm-hmm. Octopus, I mean, I'm biased, obviously, because I came from there for a couple of years, but it does a couple of things really, really well. Release management is getting much, much, much better, and it's definitely a really good option for deploying. Sure. It will take the artifacts that you have built in your build, so you know how we had our drop folder of our compiled artifacts? It will take those artifacts, and then it'll run steps to deploy them to your target
test
machines. The important thing here is that you have this life cycle of I'm going to a test server, then I'm going to a staging server, then to production, for
example.
Without rebuilding.
Right.
You're using the same bits. And ideally using the same process to deploy.
Right.
So by the time you get to production, you have deployed the same bits to test, and you've tested them. You've deployed those exact same compiled bits to staging, and then the exact same compiled bits to production.
Right.
That necessitates some kind of like architectural acknowledgement in your application that you can still deploy the same bits. Things like having your configuration outside. So if you're connecting to a database, that database connection string should be in some configuration that you can change at deploy time. But it's really important. You build once, deploy many times. That way, by the time it gets to production, hopefully you've been able to test it properly.
And so that's what release management or Octopus Deploy would do, is it would take those binaries, put them in testing, run through its thing, put them in staging, leave it there, and is there any way to be like, okay, after it's in staging for like a day, then move it to production? Will it do that kind of thing?
That's a very good question. I don't know if it'll do it automatically after a period of time.
How does that usually work then?
So usually there's kind of approval processes in between them. If you're doing continuous deployment, you can just make sure that it goes through all the pipelines, run some tests at each stage to make sure everything's okay, and then just let it go to the next stage. But you can also set up like
guards.
An approval process, a guard, and say, somebody in this team in my company needs to say, all right, it's ready to go to staging now. And this is really common with companies that have like full test teams. So they'll deploy, push this all the way out to a test environment, and then they'll make sure that somebody from the test team signs off and says, right, this is okay to go to production now. Often you'll have like a guard at the end of a stage and a guard at the start of a stage too. So the end of a stage, there might be an acknowledgement from somebody in the test team that they've run all their tests, it is ready to go to production, but then it doesn't go to production until somebody from your management team says, right, we need to deploy this now.
Right, because it might be like, it might be a marketing thing, you know? Everything be engineering-wise is great, and at the end of the phase, you're like, okay, we're good.
Yep.
And then at the beginning, you wait till, for example, we were releasing this on the 15th kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So my question then is, like, that's what release management and Octopus Deploy would do, is it would have those guards available.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. They work a different way. Like, release management has kind of approval processes, post-deployment and pre-deployment approval processes. Octopus works in a different way where only certain people are allowed to kind of push the deploy button.
I see.
So it's, there are like manual intervention steps that you can put in as well, but it's all about making sure the right people can make those decisions.
Awesome.
About when stuff goes in.
Well, yeah. All our time is gone, and that was super fast. So let's finish up with where can people reach out to you? Where can they find your writing? Where can they learn about DevOps from you?
So Damovisa, so Damovisa is my Twitter handle. Damovisa.me is the website. I'll be at various conferences.
Awesome.
I'm doing them like one at a time, so I don't really know, but yeah.
You're the best. It's good to be a colleague. We work in the same organization,
yeah,
this guy.
It's cool now.
We're pretty excited to have him on the team. Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
No problem.
Thanks so much for watching. We'll be right back after another session. We'll see you in a little bit.